Welcome to the Inspired Teacher's Guide podcast. We are Kim Wilkins and Laura Woldridge, just two teachers trying to podcast. We are so glad that you've joined us. On this podcast, we will be talking in and outside the classroom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back.
Hey, everybody. Sorry we had no music. We are professional podcasters over here. I'm not sure what's going on, but oh, well.
Oh, well. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, we hope you are settling into summer. The past three podcast episodes have been all about books. We had two episodes that were about fun books, just leisurely, summer reading. And then our last one was about professional text. So professional texts that have made a major difference in our lives. And those were really focused on classroom management and just core instruction. Today, we're going to lend our attention over to some subject-specific books that have made a big difference in our lives. So we'll go through math, social studies, etc., and just walk you through some ideas that may interest you. So,
yeah, I think this will be a good one, Laura. I tend to have mainly reading and math. But some of the reading pieces that we'll discuss will help in the content areas as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of what we do in life. You know, you study what you need to learn. Mm-hmm. And Kim and I have been very focused the past few years on some specific areas. And so, sorry, science, we don't have much for you, but we've got some content stuff that will help the writing and reading of your science material.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
So just today, for the first time in four podcasts, I am remembering that the books we are sharing will be linked on our show notes. So you don't have to super stress about getting down titles or authors. Now, some of our ultimate favorite authors, I have just linked the pages, but those texts that we share will pop out to you. So, all right. Are you ready, Kim?
I'm ready.
All right. What do you want to do first?
Well, let's go ahead and just start with this historical thinking one, since it's the only history one I have. This is a book that I bought when I was working with high school history teachers. This is Historical Thinking Skills, a workbook for U.S. history. However, the strategies in it can be used for any history. Mm-hmm. So it's broken down into strategies to use while you're trying to understand the content. It is listed by topic, like new imperialism or North and South on the eve of the Civil War, and defining a period like a colonial period or the European exploration. So it is broken down in that. However, inside, and I'm showing you this like you can see it, there are cause and effect graphic organizers. And underneath, it'll have the cause, the effect, because history is all cause and effect, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the most important reason why and the least important reason why. So there's lots of cause and effect. There's defining characteristics. So you might say Cold War. That might be the topic that you're studying. And why it happened and the defining characteristics, and then contradictory characteristics. So it helps kids really organize their thinking, mm-hmm, about a particular topic. There's contextualization and synthesis. So like you're contextualizing this information and then you're synthesizing the information. So it helps you really take this history lesson to a more applicable level.
Not just memorizing.
Yeah. I really, really like this. I think I had one on world history, and I'm pretty sure I loaned it to somebody.
Please return it to Kim.
If you have my historical thinking skills for world history, let me have it back. But if not, make sure you're using it.
Yeah.
So just use it.
My friends Kyla and Joya, you need this book.
It's really good. There's a part in the back on argumentation.
Okay.
So how to support and refute something. So how to argue a point of view or a perspective.
Oh, that's great, Kim.
I know. It's a really, really good book. So I highly recommend this for anybody that's teaching history. Okay. The author is John P. Irish, and we will link it. In fact, I'll link all the books by him that are like that.
Yeah.
Because these are really, really good.
All right. I will keep those in mind when I do social studies workshops.
Yeah.
Going on that, it's not a book, but it is a website. Stanford University has that Reading Like a Historian series. You can just Google Stanford University Reading Like a Historian, and it goes through the skills that historians use to research, and it is designed to transform history classrooms instead of just lecture into true research-based approaches, but it's all built on the skills that historians use. So I have used that for, golly, I'm probably going on 12, 13, 14 years with history teachers, just walking them through those skills and talking about how we can do it. So really, it is an approach that you could use in any history classroom. Literally, I could do it in the elementary school. I would just have to support it more. But these are the skills historians need. And it's just great. So I think, man, coupled with that book you had and this.
Yes. Another one we could add in with that in the content areas is, and we may have discussed this before, is Make It Stick.
Oh, yes. Yes.
The book Make It Stick. So it is broken down. The chapters are Learning is Misunderstood. So what we think we know about how kids learn or how we learn as human beings and what really happens cognitively in learning, and then to learn and then retrieve, that retrieval process, spaced retrieval, mixed up practice, embrace difficulties, because that's where it's when it's hard and you're having to work through it, that's where the learning takes place.
Yes.
Avoid the illusion of knowing. So you think you know something, but you haven't haven't made it stick yet.
Right.
And getting beyond learning styles. We want to think we learn a certain way, but we need all the modalities. We need all the things mixed up, not just one. And then just really just how to make it stick and increase our knowledge and our abilities. So it's that's a really good read with practical strategies to use.
Yeah.
And we do a workshop on that, by the way.
It's so good, guys.
It is so good.
I'm just thinking for all your APUSH kids, kids who are in these AP classes, having to take these massive tests at the end of the year, or even college kids trying to take those praxis tests. You know, it's really got social studies instruction really has to be hands-on active learning to really work. So
it
those
does.
Are great resources.
I think I've mentioned this before, but what I found interesting is my friend Debbie Webb shared this with me because her son Connor was in medical school, and in medical school at the very first thing of required reading was Make It Stick.
I just love that.
I do too.
I mean, that is so smart, UAMS, to figure that
out. We love UAMS. Yeah.
So another book that would help you social studies and science people, more in the upper grades, but is Reading Nonfiction by Beers and Probst. So they have created these signposts that help kids know what to look for when they're reading. You know, they get so overwhelmed when they're reading. And so it's just helpful to, just like a signpost is for us on the road. This is what this book does for kids to help them read nonfiction. So highly recommend it. And then they have a fiction version called Notice and Note. And Kim and I we've used those books for decades.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, Laura, and I can share, I have pictures of the anchor charts that I've made with kids for the fiction signpost and the nonfiction signpost. So we could just post those on our Facebook page, I guess.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Kids need so much help reading content. And like we said, if we want to make it stick, you know, we've got to really engage their brains. There is a complete difference in compliance reading and passive reading than real reading. And so these signposts and strategies will really help your kiddos, even your big kiddos, read.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Unstoppable Learning?
No.
Okay. So this is a new one for me. It's by Laurie Robinson Sammons and Nancy N. Smith, and it's edited by Douglas Fisher and Nancy Fry. Yeah. And so it is, again, lots of strategies, and it's everything. It's how to design a unit plan for whatever content you're teaching. And it has launching the lesson and how to start the unit, how to consolidate the unit by selecting appropriate and specific tasks for students to do.
Okay.
Assessing students responsively and adapting your instruction through differentiation. And so there are lots of examples in this book for how to do those particular things. And there are reproducibles in here as well. Okay. It's a really, really good book for content area, in math as well. I mean, like any subject area. It's called Unstoppable Learning, a handbook for Unstoppable Learning. It's really good.
What grade band?
It's K-12.
Okay, it's K-12. So, yay. Mm-hmm.
Detailed practical instructional strategies that K-12 educators can use to effectively apply the 7 essential elements in Unstoppable Learning. 7 essential elements to unleash student potential.
I want to look at that one.
Well, I'll trade it for that other book we were talking about earlier.
Sounds cool.
Yes.
Are we done with social studies?
And science, that and content. Yes. You want to move to math?
Hold on. You liked that Lies, My History Teacher.
That is one of my favorite books. I read it to the kids in the car on the way to vacation.
Talk about it.
I get people trapped in a vehicle and they're going to listen to me. So, yeah, Lies My History Teacher Told Me and Other Myths of History.
Okay.
Yes, it's so good. And a lot of it, Laura, I remember learning some of it when I got to college in history classes, and it just really was a little bit, what do you call that when it was a dissonance, like a cognitive dissonance for me, because I was, what I had learned and because I was, that was all I was ready to learn when I was in sixth grade or seventh grade. Right. And then what I was learning in college was different. And so I think there's a way to meld that together so that we can teach kids. I taught history. I like history. So we can teach kids in a way, cause it can get pretty graphic.
Oh, like yeah.
It's pretty brutal. Historically, I just read a book about, I love anything British, and I just read about a book about each one of King Henry VIII's wives, his 5 wives.
Yeah, was have you seen Six? The play Six?
No.
Oh, Kim. And people, if you're going to New York or Six comes around to you, it is the ultimate girls' night play. And
okay.
I'm gonna take my voice too, but it goes through each of the wives.
Yes. So I just read it in one of the books. You know, he divorced.
Beheaded.
Died. Divorced. Beheaded. Survived. That's how they go. But when I was reading that, the brutality of that time period. And so we can't, when we're studying history, one thing I think we have to do with kids is help them understand that we cannot judge history through our morals.
Right.
Our beliefs today, because it was just a different time. It was brutal. It was awful. It was horrific, but that's what it was. And we can't sugarcoat it. We've learned better. We do better. We have to remember the ethics and the morals and the values of the people of that time period. It's different than the ones that we have now.
Right. So much more.
Right. We just don't go kill people because they don't believe because, you know, at that time it was if you were a Protestant, yeah. whoever the leader was, that you were going to be killed or and tortured in horrible ways. Oh, or then they did it to the Catholics. And it was just really this whole war that was really nonsense. If you think about it, everybody's just trying to do the best they can. And that's how we would look at it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of your beliefs are your beliefs and my beliefs are my beliefs. And those are personal. It wasn't personal then. So anyway, that's just one of the examples, but.
Good stuff. I just thought of one more social studies resource. Again, it's not a book, but it is a website. It's called C3. It's like civics. I can't remember the three C's, but anyway, they actually, if you click on the inquiries, they have units that you can go through and replicate, and they are really, really good. And that's K through 12. Actually, I think it may be even upper, higher ed.
Because so is it just civics?
No. It goes through history. It's called C3, and one of the C's is civics.
Okay.
I can't remember what, maybe community. Oh, gosh. College, career, and civic life. But they're all inquiry-based social studies units. And they're huge. And they've got performance-based tasks embedded. They have assessments. They have the materials. It's a great resource.
Oh, let's link that for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Did you say let's go to math?
Sure.
Before I started talking about other socialized things. Okay. I mean, not that I don't mention it every podcast, but the ultimate math book for me for you to read is Building Thinking Classrooms, guys. I just cannot tell you enough. Encourage you enough to read it. Building Thinking Classrooms, there are two additional ones that go along with it. Modifying Your Thinking Classroom, and so that's for that differentiation piece and support. And then they have a new one that is just focused on K through 5, is Mathematical Task for the Thinking Classroom. Emma Weeks, here is your chance to really capitalize on what Emma French has been talking about. You guys, if you teach math, please, 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 please read it and implement it. It is work to implement the principles, but I am telling you, your teaching will never go back. And you will see such an increase in making learning stick and them truly understanding math. So if you're K through 5, you can still, I want you to still read Building Thinking Classrooms. I just think you'll see more relevance to you in the other with the mathematical task. But guys, it's for real.
It's the real deal.
So, okay. What's something, math, you've got for us?
Number Sense Routines.
Oh, yes.
I love that book. I've used that with kindergarten and I've used it with sixth graders. We did counting patterns are so huge for building that. We've counted by fractions. Oh. And then they would have, yeah. So, yes. And so they would have to give the equivalent fractions, and it is really, really,
mm-hmm.
really a great book. But it's all about all these routines that you build in daily into your classroom in order to develop that number sense. And so much of the time, that's what's missing, particularly with students who have a specific learning disability in math. They're lacking number sense. If they have dyscalculia, this is one area that we can work on that will really be beneficial to them.
Oh, I can amen that one. And if you have my book of number sense routines, I would love to have it back because I don't have it.
Same, girl. I don't know where mine is either. I loaned it to somebody here at school, but I'm not sure.
We must get better about logging who we loan our stuff to. All right. One that Kim and I love going on top of that is called Number Talks. So I have done tons of workshops on this concept, but it's just really, I mean, it's a quick touch of your day. It is building mathematical conversations. It is building thinking, and you are a true facilitator of math. The book has a CD, so you can actually see these number talks in action. at our university, our math professor, she taught the students to do this and implement it, and the future teachers, and they loved it. The book is designed for K through 5, but man, the concept can be transferable. So, recommended.
Highly recommended.
How many tabs this one has?
Why do you see this one? This is actually your book, the next one I'm going to show, but I'm sorry.
You're fine.
And look at the tabs.
Oh, yeah.
Math exchanges for small group math.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that one. Oh, Stephanie Hatcher, I think you would like this one.
She would. Everybody would. So she even gives an example of a calendar for her math exchanges and how her small groups go. We tend to think of small groups for reading, but they really need it for math. I had a teacher I worked with at Mark Tree, Arkansas, right here close to Jonesboro, and she really taught her whole math 90 minutes in small groups. Mm-hmm. So the kids would come to her. She would teach the lesson to them. She might do a whole group small lesson, and then she would do her guided practice with them in small groups.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me. Attention, and just that smaller ratio.
And her math scores, not that math scores are everything, but they were amazing. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's wise, because she was able to differentiate so much, because that was the whole setup of her classroom. So that's really, this is guiding young mathematicians in small group meetings. And that's a really good one.
Yeah.
I really like this book.
That's a great one.
I'll bring it back to you.
Keep it for a little longer. Let's see. I think that's all my math books.
Well, I have another. It's Guided Math, A Framework for Mathematics Instruction. Mm-hmm. It's, again, setting up that classroom for mathematical thinking and linking mathematics to other curricular topics. How to do the number of the day, how to stretch their thinking through the number of the day, which is a huge thing. When I was in the classroom teaching second grade, we did a number of the day, whatever the day of school. So if it was the 10th day of school, they had to write a number. They had to write every way they could make 10, right? And then they had to write a story, and like a math story about 10. So that morphed into, by the time we got to 100 days of school, they were multiplying, and I didn't teach them that.
Yeah, they're building their knowledge.
Yes, they were. And then I would have them explain their thinking on their math stories, and it was really that number of the day that was just the thing they did. They came in, they did their number of the day, like a CGI problem.
Okay.
What we call a CGI problem now. I used
guided instruction.
Yes. And I used read it, draw it, solve it.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. For my CGI problem. And they would do their number of the day, they would do their CGI problem, and then they would read and go to breakfast. And so all that was going on. Mm-hmm. So no time was wasted. I did not turn on a television. I did not put them on a computer.
Yeah.
That was just one of their routines for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it really developed over time to where they were breaking, like when we got to 120, they would write 100 plus 20 plus, well, if it's 123, 100 plus 20 plus 3, or they would do 50 plus 50 mm-hmm. plus 10 plus 10 plus 2 plus 1. So they were breaking these numbers apart, because it became a competition on who could have the most complex number sentence, the most complex equation.
You wouldn't believe it. I was doing a workshop with 12 first grade teachers the other day, and they had to make a list of vocabulary words that were related to opinion writing, and it turned into a competition.
It just does. The last one I think I have, Laura, is this one. It's called It Makes Sense, and it is all about using 10 frames to develop number sense. It's a really good one. So it is like this. It's a game. So this is Race to 20.
Okay.
So they're all kind. It's really activity based. So a teacher could literally just go through and pick an activity, and that could be a warm up for a math lesson. I just don't think we do enough with number sense.
Yes. And then we pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's all I know about math.
All right. That's fun math. And really, guys, a lot of the curricula that have been developed, like with Eureka Math or Engage New York, if you use the free version, if you just really study that concept development section in the student debrief, that's going to empower you to promote thinking. And if you're an IM school, you know, just really studying your curriculum is also going to help you promote thinking.
It is. And you can't just do the problem sets.
No.
That doesn't develop anything.
No, it's called concept development for a reason. So please, pretty please do it.
Yes. Don't skip it.
And don't tell us if you don't. Okay. Let's talk what?
Writing.
Okay. Start us off.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's do writing and grammar together. Okay. One of my favorite books ever is Patterns of Power. I use it all the time for introducing a principle or a lesson on grammar. It's really good for introduction. Mm-hmm. You can add other things in for practice. But Jeff Anderson, who is another one of my best friends, even though I've never met him,
yes,
We did meet him, and I have a photo of myself with him. I should send him that so he might come on our podcast. But he really approaches it as function. What's the function of this part of speech? Mm-hmm. So what does a pronoun do? What does a noun do? And that is really what's more important, other than identifying, you know, this is a noun, this is a verb. What's the function of that? And we learned that too back when we did our work during COVID with William Van Cleef. Yeah. Really, it's about the function. And that's how Jeff Anderson.
And his approach is an invitation approach, which I like.
Oh, I love it.
Completely love. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were teaching grammar today and 10 years ago, I would be using Jeff Anderson's approach. No question. He has these books, Patterns of Power, K through 5, 6 through 8, and 9 through 12, and even preschool. So my little preschool friends, even we can do that. And guys, the Arkansas standards, if you're in Arkansas, all the grammar standards have changed to use. So use adjectives, use adverbs.
That's right.
And many of the curriculum that we use are just identifying. So, and plus, that's why it doesn't stick, is we're never using it. So this is fantastic support for you. And literally, like, I've got the 6 through 8 book in my hand, and it just goes through the different components, like how to teach complex sentences, how to teach compound sentences, etc. And I mean, there's just no better way.
There is not. And I love his invitations and his mentor pieces. Mm. Those are so good to show how an actual published author has used this particular feature of language,
yes,
in their own writing. So he links it to the writing and how to use it. So I love Jeff Anderson. I think he's spectacular and ahead of his time. And Laura, in fact, you and I were using, mm-hmm, his work 15 years ago.
That's right, with Mechanically Inclined.
Yes, we were.
Everyday editing.
Yeah, let's put those down. I'll just link everything Jeff Anderson.
Actually, I think I already linked his work. Just fantastic. But seriously, if you need a curriculum or lots of support in this, that Patterns of Power book for whatever grade level you teach is your ticket. And you will see your grammar instruction take off. And guys, it doesn't even take long. Like, we're talking 10 minutes a day.
Yes. Yeah. I like everything that Ralph Fletcher does.
Me too.
I do. And I've used his work a lot. All his books are very, they're for the general pub, you know, just regular teachers, just like us. Like, you can literally take them and use them. So I actually cannot have
I'm looking at mine right now. He has craft lessons, nonfiction craft lessons, and those are just quick mini lessons that are fantastic. He has a whole kit called Teaching Qualities of Writing. That's fantastic. Just how to get writer's workshop going. Like, I'm sitting here looking at a whole little folder thing I have. Just, and Boy Writers. Didn't he write Boy Writers?
He did. He wrote Boy Writers.
Yeah, like, this, it is just, he's the man for writing.
Yes, for real writing. For so real. He has this little book that I've had. Okay, I've had this for so long. I'm trying to see when it was published.
Is it Live Writing? Is that what
it's Live Writing, 1999. So that's probably how long I've had it. Mm-hmm. But it is how to, it's the writer's toolbox and how to read like you're a writer and how to build characters, mm-hmm. Thoughts on creating characters, connecting with the reader. So it's really, here's what I've highlighted. We all do have a voice, just as everybody has a personality, but our true voices can get lost exactly the same way we can lose our true personality or lose our sense of style. Mm-hmm. So I've highlighted that. I wonder why. The problem comes when we try to be other than who we really are, either in our writing or in our personalities.
And we really have to be careful like that, guys, as writing teachers. We don't want to foursquare them to death and beat the curiosity and the creativity out of writing out of them. So yeah. It's very important that we build our skills and our confidence in teaching writing. And Ralph Fletcher is a great way to start. And he's the man for writing, and the woman for writing is Lucy Calkins. And I know that there's been lots of controversy over her with reading in Arkansas. But if you read the scripts of her teaching writing, you will learn how to teach writing. So,
yes, in conference with kids about their writing.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful and productive.
Yes.
So, what about for young writers, like just getting that sentence? I'm a wholehearted believer in just that interactive writing approach.
I do too. There's a book called Never Too Young to Write.
Okay.
And it is really about that early writing, just labeling, moving to phrases, moving to sentences. It's a really good one. It's an old one.
We'll link. We have a interactive writing. It's kind of scripted out, like with the procedure, step by step. And so we'll link that procedure for you because we worked with our Forest City teachers on that. That's a good
one. I'll tell you, sometimes, Laura, kids do need structure.
Oh, yeah.
They aren't structuring. And for that, I do like to use the 6+1 traits.
Oh, I forgot about
that. Of writing. Right. I do. When you're just... they just aren't getting anything down. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do need a four square to start with.
Yes.
Just to get the structure in there, or something like 6+1 traits of writing. I think that there are children who have language difficulties and they really need that structure. Not everybody does. So that could be an intervention.
Yes. And I'm not bashing the four square. I'm just saying we can't stay there.
No, we can't. And there needs to be another opportunity in the day for journaling and just expressive writing. And yeah.
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 So really what you need to do is read Ralph Fletcher, Lucy, and the 6 traits, and meld your own approach.
You do. All of them. Just kind of what we've done, really.
And you will produce some amazing writers. Mm-hmm. There is a book that's being studied, The Writing Revolution. And it's really William Van Cleavish.
The
Hockman Method is what is taught in it. And they have one, The Writing Revolution 2.0. You're going to need more than that, but it would help if you're like, I know writing is scary to so many teachers. And so it might give you some ideas to get how to write. It starts at the sentence level activities, and then moves up to a single paragraph and then a multi-paragraph. So something that can provide, again, structure.
William Van Cleve also wrote Writing Manners, Matters, Writing Matters, Developing Sentence Skills in Students of All Age. So really getting at that sentence level.
Mm-hmm. And Kim went through that training with him. We were honored to do that. And he's passed away, which is so sad.
So sad and a great loss for the education world.
And just for the humor
For the world.
That Writing Matters book. We'll also complement, like, Jeff Anderson, like pushing those two approaches together for grammar. Mm-hmm. And he, William Van Cleve, said it doesn't matter what grade you teach. If you're in Comp 1 in English in college, you start at the sentence level and build up. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think that's so important to do.
He has two smaller books called the workbooks, actually. That might be very useful for teachers to kind of get an idea about how to implement everything that he has in Writing Matters mm-hmm. in a real practical way. But I think anything by William Van Cleve is good when it comes to writing and reading. But you know, one thing I learned from him too, Laura, when we did our training with him, is that when you understand how sentences work, it improves your comprehension. It's not just this idea that we're composing, but when I understand structure of sentences and structure of paragraphs, then I can comprehend that better when I'm reading. So again, those are reciprocal processes and we tend to forget that. But I do think that if you have school money, that would be, and you're a writing teacher, that is a very valuable piece to get.
Yes. And he is an immediate implementer of content. So let's say that we're doing commas or doing adjectives. Let's say we're doing adjectives and it says George Washington is a man. Then if you've been learning about adjectives, your almost end product would be to add three adjectives to that sentence, and it must come from your lesson. So embedding mm-hmm. is just fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, he did work with secondary teachers in the content areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he focused on syntax exclusively.
And I think Arkansas Teachers, one of the RISE videos is by him. So it's been a long time since I've
It has been a long time. Yeah.
But anyway, he would be some spice to add to your watching. So.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. I'm glad we got to meet him.
Oh, me too.
So thankful.
I have one book that, I don't want to clip that.
Sorry.
It's okay. I have one book that is called From Striving to Thriving Writers. And Stephanie Harvey is an author on that. You know, she wrote Strategies That Work, which is great for comprehension. But she has one for writers and for readers. And that can be our segue into reading. The reading one really focuses on how to create a community of readers that love to read, that don't just read. It also gives you some instruction stuff. But both of those books are good additions. So Striving to Thriving, as she has writers and readers.
Okay, so first of all, if you haven't read it, you should have read it in college, but if you did not, and you are a teacher of reading, you need to read The Read Aloud Handbook by Jim Trelease. It's old, but it is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And Reading Magic by Mem Fox. On reading aloud to children, why reading aloud to our children will change their lives forever.
Oh, and do I believe it or what?
They need it. They need you to read things to them that they cannot read for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You need to read above their level. And those two books, before you ever start your year this summer, just pick those up, just read certain chapters of them that interest you. But Jim Trelease, I read that years and years ago when I first started teaching, and I still get it back out and look at it. And then Reading Magic by Mem Fox.
I think it will just excite you to, you know, just to Kids will never learn to read or never learn to love reading if their teacher or their parent, like somebody, is not fired up about it.
That's right. Yeah.
We have to model what we want. And mm-hmm. and if you're not a passionate reader, then try to listen, you know, try to read books on audiobooks, because that's still reading. But we have got to, we can't just teach them to read. We've got to get them invested in reading, and that is by book talking and being fired up about reading.
You know, my Landon is dyslexic. G-Bar. She was really, really good at that, Laura. And I think that's when he turned the corner as a reader. Mm-hmm. He's never going to be a fast reader, but that's when he really got to, which I'd read to him, you know.
All right.
So many things. We'd read every classical piece of literature, but as a reader himself, independently, when he had her, she would do these amazing book talks and get him started on books. And then he was a series kid. So if he started one book, then he wanted to read the whole series. And I really attribute his love for reading to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, some books that we love about small groups and centers or stations. Debbie Diller. We love Debbie Diller and Debbie Miller. They're great.
Yes.
She also, Debbie Diller has a book about math stations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are needing help, because that's a difficult thing to do, differentiation and centers and stations. Those are three great resources for you.
Yes. It's called this, the one that I'm looking at is Spaces and Places. It's Designing a Classroom for Literacy. And it really is all about the centers and how to really set that up and mm-hmm. practice that. I think this is a really good book. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I wish I would have written it.
I know. I'm reading some of these and I'm thinking we could have done that. My Debbie Miller book, you can't see it, but I got it way back in the 1900s. I think it was, no, I didn't. It was published in 2002.
Okay.
I bought it and the pages are literally falling out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, and I've got notes in the columns that tell me where I'm going to use that. So I read it on the way to Myrtle Beach, which, by the way, from where we live is a 16-hour drive. Read it on the way out there. On the way back, I highlighted it and took notes about how I was going to implement it when school started back. And then I handed it to Ashley.
She's like, okay.
She's like, okay, this is what we're doing. I even had my classroom set up like hers.
So much of my reading instruction is mimicked off of her.
Yes, yes.
And quoting the book, Reading with Meaning. And she also, Debbie Miller, also has a great book called Teaching with Intention.
Yes.
And am I a believer in that?
Me too.
You higher level teachers of reading, so middle school, high school, Kelly Gallagher and Penny Kittle have a book called 180 Days, Two Teachers and the Quest to Engage and Empower Adolescents. And I love this book. So Crystal Hooten and my upper level English teachers, read it and let's talk.
Yes, so, I love it. I also have his book, Deeper Reading,
mm-hmm.
Comprehending Challenging Texts for grades 4 through 12.
I'm just looking up here, Kelly Gallagher's Write Like This. You know, that's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And his book, Read Aside, which is old. But it's,
oh, but it's good.
Oh, gosh. I pulled it out for my university kids to read part of it. You know, what schools are doing to kill reading.
Mm-hmm.
They are still committing the crimes, guys. It's sad.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Deeper reading. Penny Kittle, who co-wrote 180 Days with Kelly Gallagher, she also has a book called Book Love, and it's just giving you higher level teachers ideas for how to create a love of books. And the 180 Days book also comes with video access, and you can actually watch Penny and Kelly teach, and they're super good. They're good videos.
Laura, this one is I had it in my reading stack, but it's really anything. And it's an old one again. It's Classroom Instruction That Works by Marzano.
Uh-huh.
It's a really good one, but research-based strategies for independent student, for increasing student achievement. And so I've made notes all through here, but there are, you could, like if you were teaching about generating and testing a hypothesis, there's a section you can read. Or if you're teaching about, reciprocal teaching, if you're using reciprocal teaching, it tells you how to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has research on homework in here.
Yeah, which is not great. Yeah. Something we've got to think about, guys, is whatever content area we are teaching, we have to engage our students in it. So any studying that you can do about engagement, is going to produce fruit in any implementation. I have one more reading book that I want to share that I can think of now. I mean, as soon as the podcast ends, I'll be coming up with ideas. But Stephanie Harvey and Harvey Daniels, so a power couple that are not married, wrote a book called Comprehension and Collaboration.
Yes.
It's a book about inquiry circles, really guiding you through approaching text in a way that sticks and makes the brain think. So I highly recommend that to you too.
This is Summarization in Any Subject.
Oh, that's good content.
Rick Wormelli. And so what is really good about this book? I like books that teachers can pick up and just say, okay, I want to try this strategy. So summarization techniques that she or that he recommends are like 3-2-1 or acronyms. So they're creating concrete spelling. They design a test. They use the Frayer model. They do human bingo, inner outer circle. Some of these engagement strategies that you and I have shown, jigsaws, learning logs, lineups,
okay.
Just different strategies that you can do. The RAFT strategy, we talked about that one before. Summarization pyramids. So these are really think, pair, share, which we try. Word splash. All there, just so many great strategies that you could use that would, as Laura said, increase engagement and really solidify that learning. And give them additional practice.
Your APUSH students, like they've got to study for these big content tests. So if we have good summarization techniques after every topic we studied, that would be so helpful when it comes crunch.
It really would. It really would. There's so much content for them to learn. Oh, this one's about you writing a camp song. I mean, it's fun stuff. And if we can keep them engaged, you know, we have a huge competition going on with technology and kids who want to be on devices all the time. So if we're going to have to up our game in the classroom,
we really are,
to keep them engaged. Some books that I think are good. If you are trying to understand the science of reading, this is it in a nutshell. It's Literacy Instruction and Assessment, and it's everything that you need to know. Now this is heavy. Like this is for learning as a professional. So it's a really professional text. So what is phonemic awareness? How to use letter tiles, sorting words, the overarching qualities of effective vocabulary instruction. So this is a good book to study if you really want to understand how a child learns to read. And it comes pre-K 6 and then 7-12.
Okay. And if you're trying to pass the Foundations of Reading test.
Oh, this is a great book for the Foundations of Reading assessment. It's a really good one. Another one that I really like, and I've done workshops on this one, it's called Core 6. Remember that, Laura?
Mm-hmm.
We got this when the Common Core Standards came out. But what I learned from this is it's just good instruction, right? It has no bearing on if you're in Texas and you or in Arkansas and you don't really have the Common Core Standards, but you have your state standards. teachers treat the identification of similarities and differences at the end of a comparison process. Instead of comparing and contrasting two items and leaving it at that, compare and contrast uses higher order questions to help students draw conclusions and extend to their thinking. So it's that kind of thing, how to take this strategy that we used, compare and contrast, and then raise the bar, push them. So there are lots of strategies you can use in here. We do workshops on these to teach you how to do that. This is a great book, though. It's published by ASCD. So it's a solid piece.
Yeah. Kim, I just picked up this book and it's yours. So sorry. And I really love this one. I guess I don't have my own. It's Words Their Way. And this book comes in many different formats, but it has sorts and some great ideas for you to instruct your kids and to do in whole group or small group or things like that. But it goes by development. So the letter naming stage, the what is next, within words, syllable juncture, just kind of goes up the ladder. But this is great. It's not like we have to have the explicit phonics instruction, but the Words Their Way books will help that guided practice section of your lesson.
Yeah, I want to speak about that. Back when I was a balanced literacy teacher and doing guided reading, I got that book. Debbie Kaufman was our literacy specialist at our educational cooperative back then. And she said, well, let's test your kids and see where they are in their spelling. Because if you can spell a word, you can read it. You can read words without being able to spell them. So we did. And so then I used that to group my students. So we still did guided reading, but at the end, in each lesson, I would teach a mini lesson on a phonics principle using that book, those books, those sort books. And then those sorts, after we practiced it in the small group for several days, that would go into a center for them to choose from. And the centers were leveled based on what they needed. And so when I did that, Laura, my reading level, my kids grew in reading so much quicker. It made a huge impact and really changed my thinking about how phonics instruction is essential for the teaching of reading. It is. And how it has to be explicit.
Mm-hmm. And engaging.
And engaging, yeah. And
it will help you do those things.
Yeah. This is one, I think you have this one, disruptive thinking, how we read matters. Again, this is a really good book. They give you examples of the graphic organizers you can make, how to teach that strategy. So this one's on what's in your head, what fix up strategies, what I'm thinking, what did I already know what did the author think I knew?
Right. And I think that would be another one for our higher level literacy teachers. Mm-hmm. That would be a good one for you to study.
Yeah. What surprised me. So just really helping kids be metacognitive, really.
Yes. About their thinking.
Here's one we love. And I remember you used this to teach.
Gosh, yes.
You used one of Brock's shoes.
Yes, I did. His house shoe.
I use this a lot when I'm introducing a strategy.
Okay. It's called, tell them.
I'm sorry. Comprehension Connections, Bridges to Strategic Reading. And it's got a foreword. It's by Tani McGregor and a foreword by Stephanie Harvey. So it is a hands-on experience, really, to show that thinking strategy outside of reading.
Yes, which they already do it.
Yes.
Now we're going to do it with text.
That's right. So I've used it a lot. I remember I found some driftwood on the beach. I always pick up random things on the beach and bring them home and use them in decor. But I found this driftwood and I took it to teach inferring, questioning and then inferring. And I used it with maybe second or third graders. And they asked me, well, where'd you find it? What is it? How big is it? Is that just part of it? And then, so we listed our questions and then we inferred what we thought. Well, we think it's a dinosaur bone they were so surprised. I said, well, I'll tell you when we're all finished with our thinking, but you can pick up your husband's house slipper. And I mean, It is really good. And it really made me think about how kids are inferring all the time. Mm-hmm. They just don't do it in text because they really don't understand the process that they're using. Wow. So we teach them outside of text. So it's just a really good book.
I agree. I'm so glad you remembered that.
Yes. Okay. I have some more. Okay. This is an old one. It's The Power of Retelling.
Oh, gosh.
And I really think this is where we got our triangle, square, circle thing.
I never know. I just say it came from somewhere and I don't know where it came from.
I think it came from this. This is really old, but it's all kinds of different retelling strategies for early childhood.
Yeah.
It is a really good one. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend that one.
Me too.
Okay. Real quick, speech to print. If you don't understand phonics, you need to study Louisa Moats.
You
say, oh, I wasn't taught phonics. I didn't learn that way. Okay. Go order speech to print today because it will lay it all out for you. It's a really good one. I'm going to skip this one. I'm just going to show it to you because it means so much to me. It's Beginning to Read by Marilyn Adams, and it is not an easy read. It is a very hard read.
It is a hard read, but man, it does. If you're coming from upper grades to lower grades, mm-hmm. You need it. And Kim will happily read it to you.
I'll be glad to. I've literally read the pages on orthographic processing and phonological processing. This is Phonics for the Teacher of Reading by Barbara Fox. It kind of goes hand in hand with Louisa Moats' book. So if you don't understand phonics, and some of you don't because you weren't taught that way, these are really good. Louisa Moats and this book by Barbara Fox, these are really good to help you understand how that works. So Phonics for the Teacher of Reading, or Laura and I can come teach it to you.
I've seen one before.
Oh, it's a good one. This is one that I use often. It's Bridge the Gap, Phonemic Awareness Intervention Lessons. And so it actually has the lesson in here. So if your kids are having trouble blending syllables, it has the Phonemic Awareness Lesson, Intervention Lesson in here. It's a really good, it's from Hegarty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good intervention lesson.
So a lot of you are familiar with the yellow book or the blue book that was on toll. This is not the book we're talking about. This is
right
time for interventions.
Yes, this is for interventions. Really, that book is really practice. There's not a lot of instruction in it. Right. There's explicit instruction in this book, Bridge the Gap.
Oh, so you brought that one up too.
Yeah.
Hey, one that we love, I just thought of, I was just thinking about some teachers at Marmaduke the other day that I was working with, and they're pulling these intervention groups, but it's like, what do I do with the rest of the kids? The Daily Five might be something that you...
Oh, yeah.
It has good structure for independent work, and they get to practice skills that they need. So,
yeah. Yes, it is.
Workshops on that, too.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I have one that I just like for you little early learning people. 80 morning meeting ideas for K through 2, and then they have one for 3 through 5.
Oh.
So just sweet, simple ideas to get your morning meeting going. And, morning meeting, if you really get it going, it will be one of your favorite times of the day, other than reading aloud and your number talk.
Those three.
And writing with your kids. And
writing with your kids. And reading books together in small groups.
Oh, yeah.
I love it all. I love it all. That's why I'm still doing it after all these years.
For sure.
But
okay, guys. Well, we hope we've at least given you one idea to grow professionally over the summer. And just, you know, this episode will be posted for a long time, and the show notes will be too, so you can continually come back and, you know, do the great thing of, if you teach social studies, but you heard a great book about this for literacy, share it with your friend.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's evidence, friend, Arkansas friends.
That's right.
Resources. So.
Yes, that's what we do. Be sure to follow us on social media. Download our episodes when you're listening so we know where you are and we can give you a shout out.
Yeah, we need to do that again.
Yeah.
So thank you as always for listening, and just please help our community grow and help your friends grow by sharing the podcast. So we'll see you next week, and hopefully we have music.
I hope so. Bye-bye, everybody.